audio also.
Oh, here we go. Okay, we're on now.
Hello.
That's the other place.
Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night and it's 7 o'clock. And this is our exploration of Secret Talks Volume 5, Work of Groups by E.J. Gold. It's a rich volume. We've never made the effort to make this into a, what do you call them, Ivan?
Trade paperback?
Trade paperback. And, but it is available in this particular format or the Secret Talks format. You can get it in this particular format. And what we've been doing is the volume itself is a discussion, it's an example of the groups working with EJ over the years and actual dinners and things like that and work events. So what we've done is that we have decided to do the same thing in this particular class. Dan, is there anybody online tonight? Is Brisa on? She might not have made it back yet. Okay. And the point is that this is an experiment that we're working with here. Harry in Austin is also continuing to work with a vibrant group of individuals. And in the practice of that, we observe various things that are what I call elements of a group. And we have the great fortune of having a scribe each week work with us and make notation of the elements that come about that are those elements of groupness. And so we start off each session with reading the elements that were culled from the talk of the previous meeting, and we're going to read those tonight, and fortunately, Pat is ready to go.
Wednesday, 11/15/17, Work of Groups, number 35. 1. Operations of a group. 1. 110 Pirate. Good comments from one group to share with another group.
Wow. Good point.
2. A group is a safe space with a commonality of purpose where we can become aware of the energy that we invoke and generate. 3. After reading Chapter 63 on remorse and reading Chapter 14 in Practical Work on Self, the group worked with and shared their thoughts and observations on the questions about whether we feel a sense of remorse about our mothers. And how does that remorse work in relation to our mothers and work on self? Chapter 14 in Practical Work on Self, titled Remorse of Conscience.
Great. Thank you, Pat.
And I have to say, the note-taking of that event I found internally difficult, because there were so many, triggers that were offered in the material that we read together, and then in our discussion, even more triggers. And so to follow through with the concentrate of that meeting, these notes are extremely helpful. So I'm appreciating that you could do that distillation for me, because I was not successful at it on my own. This is helpful to have a record to reference for my own distillation purposes.
So let's look at that, Pat. So one element is a group. As in a group is that you have different participants bringing different skill sets that the entire group can then
make use of.
Mm-hmm. Pat put herself on the line by sharing certain things 2 weeks ago. And when you get opened and vulnerable in such a way, sometimes the mentation is hard to follow, but at that same moment, we had a scribe who was focused on that element. Very helpful to have that. So tonight, we're going to do something that's going to require the participation of everyone. Dan, can you tell me who's signed in online, at least what their names are?
We have Panjo, Lost Horizon, Silverdale, Molly Midway, Muscle Spark, Dot Goth, and Brittany LaPlante. And it looks like another two who haven't signed in yet.
We got Molly Midway.
Yeah.
That's pretty special.
That's very cool.
That's very, very cool. So here's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to read, even though the email said chapter 65, and did it say forgetfulness? It said forgetfulness.
Yeah.
We're going to start in chapter 64. We're actually going to read both chapters. Then we're going to cycle back and hopefully get a little brief synopsis of a couple of concepts. And then we're going to go into a discussion that, for me, these two chapters pose. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So would you guys like to read, please? Ivan, Pat?
Chapter 64, Secret Talks, Volume Number 5, Work of Groups. Chapter 64, Life in the Real World is a Skill. G said that life in the real world is an acquired skill. It must be developed and must be practiced every day. It cannot be given. It must be earned through effort. G asked each person what they had learned, which required practice. Some had played the piano, some had danced, some had been in sports, etc. But every skill took time and hours of serious effort each day for several years just to master it a little.
G said, to develop a skill takes boring practice and work. We see no change for a long time, then achieve a new level. If we miss even one day, we could fall back and lose much more than one day of work. The fusion of the three lower centers, perfection, crystallization, then liquidation, before we can develop the next body. If one center dies, and the other two live on, what can we do? Sometimes a center can be revived by a teacher. Often it is hopeless.
When is it easiest to self-remember? M. When doing housework. A. When doing one job rather than many. P. When sitting and talking. V. Doing big body movements. E. Doing office work. W. When there is a quiet moment. Actively observe. Passively control. be a series of still postures rather than fluid motion.
Now we had to work hard to pay for all this talk, this tabletop philosophy. G told some of us to stay up all night and tile the kitchen floor. Those who had to work early were told to rest. We stopped for a moment to talk about some idea in that evening's talk. G came in and said, "You wish sleep more than work? You sleep now." We awoke just after daybreak on the kitchen floor.
Keep going. Chapter 65, Forgetfulness. So, you wish another exercise, Hein? Leered G in his playful, heavy accent. You not stop bothering me. We have ways to make you stop. Yes, we have our ways. By this time, he sounded more like Count Dracula, and the group was laughing merrily. Then when the mirth had subsided, G began. Decide to do something and to control no matter what.
I have continue.
And to continue, I'm sorry. And to continue no matter what, as long as you are able. Notice how quickly we forget our intentions. This is the real idea of forgetfulness. For example, we decide to continuously remember ourselves on our excursion to market. Everything goes well for a short while until we come to the abrupt realization that we have forgotten something. Maybe we even forget just what it was we forgot. Do this exercise and any continuous effort which requires unity of aim and authority over the machine. Notice how easy it is to forget personal intention. So I wanted to take those two chapters together.
Yeah.
I thought it made some sense. The chapter 64 starts with kind of a preamble to how UJ gives us the concept that, of course, in order to perfect this, you got to work at it. You got to continue to work hard at it, like any other thing that we do. And then at the bottom of that particular front page,
yeah,
he indicates the fusion of the three lower centers, perfection, crystallization, then liquidation. And Silverdale, are those concepts that come out of their Gurdjieffian work, or?
What's the question again? Are those three things what?
Do they arise from the Gurdjieffian literature formation?
The answer is kind of yes and kind of no, in this sense. First of all, let me just take a step back a moment and try to offer a comment on this chapter, Life in the Real World.
Okay.
This refers specifically, in my opinion, to an awakened essential self within our physical body. That is, we are cognizant of a separate, independent, autonomous something or other which we call the essential self within us, which has a life entirely of its own, which just happens to be sharing a human biological machine that's going about its various daily activities.
Right.
This is of course, and so when you get down to these particular words, perfection, crystallization, then liquidation, you would kind of understand, oh yeah, the point is that in order to awaken our essential self and make it an independent functioning part of ourself requires a certain cognizance on the part of our personality or our intellectual capacity that such a thing is possible, and then to begin to work towards that aim and to establish a body of habits that makes that possible. That all those steps together would be toward the perfecting of this ultimate life in the real world. And as we're making progress down that road of perfection, we gradually crystallize a body of habits for our essential self that allows it to be an independent functioning part of ourselves. We're two people in one. And in that case, once that crystallization of our essential self, that is a body of habits that allows the essential self to be a self-sufficient and independent part of our experience. Then liquidation, to my way of thinking, would refer to, okay, once we have consolidated our experience of the essential self, then we begin to learn, oh yeah, you can now kind of suddenly, on wish, on intent, to liquefy it, to diffuse it would be a better word. We can diffuse our essential self and allow it to spread out into the environment, within a particular range. And that allows other possibilities that gives us other possibilities. And so when there's a reference here in the next chapter, sorry to run on like this, but in the next chapter when it talks about movement being, we should see them as individual move. Let's see, where
right.
is that?
The same thing, yeah.
Anyway, you suddenly realize, oh yeah, I see what happens once we are able to liquefy the essential self. What we do is we actually adopt various postures, which are illustrated in the Secret, Secret Talks Volume 3 movements, and then that's accompanied by certain postures, certain moods, and so on and so forth. So anyway, sorry to run on, but that's how I understand perfection. Crystallization and liquefaction, yeah.
Or just, yeah. So let me just go around, and for everybody online too, that's the same question. I'd like you to the extent that you're able, to please answer this question. Have you experienced this sense, the direct sense of your essential self, and maybe even in diffusion as Silverdale is telling. So I have, Pat?
Yes, several times under differing conditions and sometimes where there were no conditions.
Okay, Dan?
Yes.
Yes.
Ochi? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Pat?
Yes.
And of course, Michelle.
And I.
Yes, sure.
And I. Yes.
And now we have Harry.
Harry?
Yes, I have.
And Silverdale?
Absolutely.
And what about online there, Dan?
Might be some lag. Okay.
We're trying to get all the way across the world. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not really clear on this, the diffusion of the essential self.
That's what he's using that in terms of liquidation, so that it's, the essential self is now out there in a sense. Like,
well, or maybe a better word would be relaxation. For example, when we focus on self-remembering, which is cognizance of the essential self as an independent part of ourselves, that might be considered a concentrated state of intent, more intense vibratory sensation, we'll say. And then through relaxation, we're able to diffuse or spread out and become more sensitive to the dynamics of the energy in our immediate environment.
David, I have a question.
Hang on. We have a couple of answers. Molly Midway says yes, and Doc Goss says yes.
Good. Thank you, Ben.
Good. Thank you.
Go ahead, Harry.
The first sentence of this chapter, I think, kind of contains in microcosm everything else that follows when he says, in the real world, he uses caps for both of those, real and world. I mean, he's not talking about the real world of having to get a job and engage in multiplicity and diversity and pick an instrument and or play a sport, although it is true we have to do that and to develop skills that blend with our essential being. But to be in the real world to begin with, we already have to be aware of our essential being and have it as a companion to all the activities that we do every day.
Harry, read the first and second sentence of that chapter, please.
G said that life in the real world is an acquired skill. It must be developed and must be practiced every day. It cannot be given. It must be earned through effort.
And David, I'd like to just quickly insert a comment, which is Gurdjieff wrote a trilogy of books, the first one, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, the second one, Meetings with Remarkable Men. And most significantly, the title of his third book is Life is Real Only Then
Yes.
When I Am. Referring, so I kind of see a play on words here. Life in the real world, life is only real then when I am. That is when the essential self is a separate, independent entity within us.
Okay.
And when you get it started. Yeah, I also wanted to say something too, which may be, you know, possibly a dissenting view on this, you know, regarding the fusion of the three lower centers, this perfection, crystallization, then liquidation before we can develop the next body. What it reminds me of in EJ's writings is the seven bodies of man. And, I think that he's suggesting here that it's, that what it is he's referring to stages of evolution, you know, in this case, not necessarily just daily practice, so that the idea is that there are plateaus or accomplishments, let's say, or achievements that we might hope to reach, and that what happens is that none of them are fixed. You know, none of them is a fixed or permanent condition. You know, that the issue is to go on. I think the liquidation is required in order to develop or evolve. You have to be willing to give up, to abandon your accomplishment. You have to actually forfeit, surrender what you've accomplished. And I have to say, David, here that it just so happens that I walked in on the Patty show this last weekend, and she was reading from Shakti at one point, and there's this wonderful essay that EJ wrote, this piece in Shakti about the flute player. And, you know, it is kind of impossible to paraphrase, but the essence of it, you know, it's about a teacher and a student, and he says, well, it's a flute player. Somebody comes to a master flute player, you know, wanting to learn to play the flute, and this individual, what EJ describes is, this individual has already been trained, like perhaps that's a orchestral performer of the flute, and that student comes for one lesson, and the teacher says, okay, do this, okay, well, yes, so you seem to be a pretty good flute player. Here's the lesson, you know, do this, work on this, and go away for, you know, it takes a month or 6 months or a year, whenever it is. When you've worked that out, when you've handled this lesson, then come back and let me see your work. And then there's something else that he goes on to say in that chapter, and I wish I could have memorized the exact wording, but the teacher says to the student, I want to warn you and remind you, if you go out during this month or year or 6 months, if you go out and you play a concert, you go out professionally and you say, oh, I've had this lesson from the great master and I'm going to perform, and here's my expertise, here's my great, wonderful flute playing, don't ever come back to me again. Don't ever, don't even think of getting another lesson from me, because what you've done is you've taken, you know, as if you were perfected, you know, as if you were this great flute player because you got the one lesson from the master, you're now demonstrating it, and that's like, you know, I forget what he calls it in that text, but it says it's like you're showing off, you're being an egomaniac about this little development that you've made. And he's basically, so the master, it's this demonstration where the master says to the student, you know, whatever you think you've accomplished, whatever you've earned, whatever this great performance of yours is that you can now do, you're going to forget about that and give it up and work on this little lesson, come back to me, and then I'm going to give you the next lesson and the next and the next and the next. And don't even think about performing. You're at the beginning of a long path, of a long, arduous work.
I think that's the point of these two chapters, is that no matter where you are in your work, the distance to final perfection is great. It's a great distance. So we all have to find where we're at and realize that the path ahead of us is vast, but the path ahead, it's a worthy task. It's a worthy task. And if you stop to rest on your laurels, mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called, you're done. You have admitted defeat at that point, and then at that point, the good becomes the enemy of the better. Let that soak in. You need a phone. Yeah, go ahead.
Muspelspark says, the question has some significance, but I don't understand all the terminology. Bernie LaFont says, I'm getting some static. Bernie LaFont says, I am aware that to develop a new skill, take the case of swimming, practice can be made on land, but for the person who does not believe there is somewhere to go by sea, or even that there is no sea, all that practice seems absurd or silly.
So my question is about those three steps. I almost feel like it's assumed that we only can dissolve when we reach a higher state, but isn't it also possible to, crystallize and then dissolve a negative state? I feel like I've met people who are in a constant stink wherever they go. Wouldn't that be similar, or what are your thoughts on that?
We're using a kind of a specific vocabulary, and some of the vocabulary is established in a particular way, and one of those things that is used in a particular way is this word center. So that paragraph starts at the fusion of the three lower centers. So what you're describing is something more along the lines of a psychological or an emotional state, which would not necessarily be specifically related to any of these centers. So just in terms of that, just as a basic. What I think this particular sentence has to do with, this is my take on it now, was the fusion is a description of something that takes place, if you think about how bread comes to be, there are elements which are joined. They require time and specific conditions, heat or no heat, you know, cold or no cold, whatever it is. And when you have the elements, the time, and the conditions, then something takes place, and this word here that's used is very specific, fusion, which means that something new is there. It's not what it was before, three separate, different centers. It's something else. There's a new something. Am I on the right track here? Yeah. Well, the description is the fusion of the three centers as a process. So the process is described as perfection, crystallization, then liquidation. And it's describing the process of the fusion that results in before we can develop the next body. It doesn't say that we do. It doesn't say that that makes the next body. It says we can make the conditions available for the next step. So, to me, this is preliminary. It's as Silverdale was describing. It's the work of observation. It's the work of integration, and it's the work of continuous long-term effort. And that is exactly what it says in the next sentence here. It says, if one center dies and the other two live on, what can we do? Sometimes a center can be revived by a teacher. Often it is hopeless. So there's no, what's that word, given? There's no warranty, guarantee. Exactly. There's no guarantee. The steps that are being described are not necessarily positive you're going to have something result. It's definitely not that.
And in partially to answer your question, people can get crystallized in negative states.
Oh, absolutely.
So that absolutely does occur.
Yeah.
We're not there. We're not there. But that doesn't mean that we don't have a great deal of work to do.
Yeah.
Okay? We are in a different place. As I said, we are all experienced operatives. We are. We're not beginners. Nobody here is a beginner, which puts more effort on you. Now, here was the question that I came up with when I read these two chapters, and that was, do you have a sense of when forgetfulness besets you?
You know, can I be excused?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I leave, please?
When Pat leaves, we'll talk behind her back. So.
No, this is a particular tormenting issue for me because it's not forgetfulness as in relating to your, he's shaking his head. It's not relating to, my huge aim, my work goals. No, it's everything doesn't seem to have its place any longer. So when we are using the word forgetfulness, I'm assuming for the discussion we're holding tonight that we're not talking about our ordinary everyday life forgetfulness, are we? Or are we? That has to be clarified.
So,
and if it is that, then I will excuse myself because I have nothing except forgetfulness.
Hang on. We have a savior here coming.
I can't clarify which forgetfulness, but I did want to make a comment on what you said.
Oh, no.
Because when you're referring to a forgetfulness in reference to nothing has its place, there's no necessary string of continuity. That's Sabardo, and that's one. That's an aspect that one could would be skillful to accustom oneself to navigating without having to have the string of routine really solid down. Yeah, really solid down.
The crutches of human habit.
Exactly.
And I didn't bring this phraseology up specifically for Pat, so I thought. But now that I've brought it up.
Okay, let me be crystal clear here. When I don't have the thing that I'm looking for in my brain, I do take the opportunity to be grateful for nothing. It's a moment of nothing. I appreciate
nice.
That very much.
Nice.
And that is a gift from chemo. And I'm very happy to be alive, and the chemo goes with it, and the forgetfulness goes with it. I'm totally fine with that. It's beautiful.
And we're very happy that you're alive, too.
Yes.
And your forgetfulness has zero impact
on anybody else?
My friendship with you, okay? Zero. It's just a characteristic. I live next door to an individual who's got remarkable habits, and it doesn't change my caring for her as a friend at all.
That's right.
That's
right. All. So that's one part of this, which is, what is it that you have to work with? And that's a gift that I have to work with. Now, there's the other thing, which is, what is my intentional, non-forgetful, driven, if I need to, aim? And how do I make sure that I stay on point with that? That's more crucial in terms of capacities to apply attention and effort. And that becomes more the case.
Yeah, which I think is part of what he's discussing
yes,
with us
exactly.
in these two chapters.
Yeah, he's saying.
Can you stay on aim?
Yes.
Can you keep your work alive?
Yeah, I think this forgetfulness is related to an intention, to a practice, to wanting to do a practice.
The question, are you sensitive to when forgetfulness besieges you, when it falls on you, when you have become forgetful? It's a very interesting question. Facts, the more you think about it, it's a fascinating question.
But I think, to me, it's the most commonly recurring question that I can think of since first, you know, reading the Human Biological Machine or hearing about these ideas many years ago. I mean, this is the issue that comes up. It's in one of the chapters in the Human Biological Machine. Like, yeah, okay, you're going to remember, you're going to set yourself to do this practice, and then you're going to remember to do it every day, and then you're going to keep a journal and write down at the end of the day, did I remember to do this practice or not? And, you know, the way the exercise is set up, as I recall in the Human Biological Machine, is EJ said at the time, you should only have to write this journal once. You keep this journal for 30 days and don't throw it away. You know, keep that journal and go back to it, because it's going to demonstrate to you, were you able to say, I'm intending every day to do this practice, and I did it, didn't I? Or, no, I did. I forgot it. Oh, I forgot it the third day. Oh, the 17th day, the 18th day, the 21st day, the 29th day. How did I do?
My question is, are you aware of when you have forgot, in this case, I'll just expand, your practice?
And I'd like to just offer a comment here from my own experience. Look, it takes a long time for us to learn how to remember our essential self. That is to develop a body of habits that allows the essential self to be activated upon demand. We have to develop a light switch that gives to us the confidence that when we flip it, our central self is on and is the center of gravity. Once we've achieved that, then it becomes very easy to say, is my center of gravity in my essential self, in which case I'm experiencing the real world, or is my center of gravity in the busyness of my personality, which is busy addressing the affairs of the day? And that becomes kind of a second task force, which is to learn how to move the center of gravity from the preponderant momentum of a personality just taking care of the events of the day to a concentrated center of gravity where our essential self is the master. And in that case, forgetfulness becomes the means by which we measure, is our center of gravity in our essential self, or is our center of gravity in our personality? Because I think E.J. writes in Human Biological Machine, when our personality is active, our subconscious, our essential self, is inactive and does not participate, or our essential self is active and our personality becomes inactive, and that becomes a very clear demarcation, a very clear point of demarcation in distinguishing whether we're self-remembering by means of our essential self or whether we've forgotten to self-remember because our personality is predominant. Just a comment.
Thank you. Thank you. And so I asked at the beginning of the class, have you sensed your essential self? Yes. Can you recall the forgetfulness where you broke your habits?
Yes.
Yes.
Say more, please, Harry.
Well, I have a little different perspective on this, perhaps. I think the moments of forgetfulness lead to an awakening when we realize we have forgotten. And that second force that is resisting things has reminded me again that I have missed the mark. And it's actually important that I assume a non-critical observation of it. If I sit there and I've, you know, diminish myself or remind myself of how stupid I have forgotten, I'm only intensifying my attachment with the external world. And I think it's very important to be in a position to thank these moments for occurring so that I can establish a necessary contrast so that I can blend these two things together once again. So there, my remembrance, my forgetting is something that is serving me, not really something that's hurting me. And once I've adopted that attitude, it changes how the whole thing works.
At it makes some
it
point,
a process.
At some point when you're doing your work and you're used to and you're enjoying being in the essential self in the real world, as it were,
yeah, the real one.
You miss it. You miss it if you get carried away and swept into some fugue, emotional fugue. And that's where you start to develop where the scales of balance start to change. You long to be back in that space. And the techniques that we've talked about over the years is the methodology of getting back there once you've lost your way.
I'd like to read from the third paragraph of chapter 65 because it's addressing very specifically this dilemma. Decide to do something and to continue no matter what, as long as you are able. Notice how quickly we forget our intentions This is the real idea of forgetfulness. I recall that the instructions that take place in many of the exercises for the Labyrinth Reader's course, where you're developing the skill of paying attention to the voyager and delivering instruction at the same time, both of those two capacities have to be present simultaneously and equally in order to do the job that you're required to do. And the exercises in the course are very specifically do X, notice. Do X, notice. It never says do X, and boy, aren't you a schmuck for not being able to do X.
And notice.
And notice.
There's no judgment.
No, it's
nothing.
Both parts. So this says decide to do and continue as long as you are able. Notice how quickly forget. This is the real idea of forgetfulness. And that, I think, is crucial. The idea of forgetfulness is as if it is a quantity all of its own, a quality all of its own, a characteristic all of its own, something that is not necessarily attached to your doing or not doing. It's a label.
Pat, may I add one thing to that?
Yeah.
Please, yes.
The forgetfulness is like forgetting about a lover, and then suddenly your lover shows up again, and you open the door, and there he or she is, and you're so overwhelmed, I'm so happy that they're back, that I've been separated for the joy of reunion. And that's my point about...
I totally agree with you. I have the same take as you on how this works. Exactly how you described it.
So there's nothing negative about any of it.
You
know, it works swimmingly.
You long to be back. You long to be back with the beloved. Mm-hmm. And you do, it's noticing that you are separated from the beloved.
That instills the move towards.
Exactly.
Allows you the opportunity to come back and with open arms to the beloved. In the Christian mystics, I think it's Rusbriak, the great Dutch mystic, I can't remember which one it was.
Okay.
Catherine of Siena, maybe. She said, and even if I was expelled to hell, I would reach my arms for the beloved.
Mm-hmm.
Never do I want to be parted from the beloved. So sense when you have forgotten. All I'm saying to do is, it's in parentheses, remember the beloved.
Mm-hmm.
The beloved is waiting for you. The arms are outstretched. Come, join.
St. John Climacus in his, I think it was the Ladder of Divine Ascent, says he calls this karmolipe. It's joy making sorrow.
Sorrow.
Karmolipe, I think it's the Greek word.
That is one I do not know.
Yes, Harry. Go ahead.
I just vaguely remember it, but he has a whole section in there about this precise feeling of, my gosh, I'd forgotten this wonderful thing, and I'm overwhelmed with joy to have it given back to me.
Yes.
Dakos says, for me, it is not so much being aware of an essential self. I am being that.
That's right.
Then I come back and think, observe what just was the case.
Yeah, you're imbued with the beingness of it. The essential self works very different than the machine. The machine is deliberate and, you know, ponderous in many, many ways. The essential self just is presence and attention. It's all there is. And in that great presence of the essential self is our home, and we're seeking the home all the time. We're coming back to our birth and our birthright, actually. So forgetfulness is just that. It starts to be in you so much that if something occurs, you remember that I have forgotten, because that's what you've forgotten. I'll give you two examples. For me, when the machine starts to dominate, my facial muscles start to contract, or they get stiff, you know, it's like, you know, just that sort of thing. That becomes a trigger to me to say, what's going on? It's a trigger. This weekend, or before today, I don't know if it was this weekend, I had a particular event, doesn't matter what, and I had an enormous emotional fugue. Huge. And it was so strong that it threw me into wonder. Why is this going on?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't stop the mechanism, in a sense, from working.
Right.
But my observation of it, it was so powerful. It would not have occurred if I didn't have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
But thank God, through the great work we've all done together, I had a place to go. I remembered my forgetfulness, and I knew, what is this? I didn't stop it. I didn't try to stop it. I didn't ignore it. But I could say at that moment, I am not that.
It's like that opportunity, like I was saying, you know, the first couple of times when I was looking for a word and I couldn't find it and I couldn't remember it. I've noticed people over the years, they get all upset and pissed off because, oh, well, I don't know what that word is. You know what that word is, though? I can't remember that word. I have a moment of silence. I have a moment of quiet. Why would I want to mess that up? You know?
Right.
That's a gift.
That's right.
So there's this other part, just responding to what you gave. Mm. The other example that I was giving here was the necessity sometimes to feel as if, like Marvette was describing, that you could find your way through forgetfulness.
Right.
And the Voyager's response is not necessarily to look for a way, but to look around at where you are and not feel like you must go or do, but simply, you know, take your bearings, get your orientation, just feel the space that
where
you're
am
in.
I? Where
exactly.
Am I?
That's
yeah.
Like what you were talking
That's
about
right.
there. So to use those opportunities, again, as a gift, like that.
So when you have, after you've worked on yourself for a while, and we want the response to these worldly events to be to shove you back into the arms of the beloved, in a sense.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And because we have a place to go. However humble it might be, we have a home. And we've furnished it. And it's sufficient unto itself. Okay? So that was my take on forgetfulness this week.
Mm-hmm.
Wild, huh?
Yeah.
How you doing over there, Dan?
No new comments?
Brisa show up?
No new?
No. So we have six people?
Yeah.
And now,
yes.
Molly, I'm so glad
Thank you for being here, Molly. Yay!
I wish to see you. You know, what a treat. So, I don't know what else to say. I just forgot. You know, if we, you know, we, Pat, for instance, is a classical singer, and she works a minimum, my memory is correct, at least two nights a week, you're with other professionals working on your skill sets. Ivan is a professional poet. And he works, how many nights do you teach now? Three?
Well, I'm teaching three classes.
He's teaching three bloody classes. He's teaching others how to be poets. And he has a writer's group that he manages. That's how he keeps his skill set hot. One thing we don't have too much in our group, we don't have too many sports experts, do we?
What do you mean by that, David? I'm sure there's a couple of gymnasts around and some...
That's my point.
How
about baseball players?
No.
I mean, aren't you saying that it, in a sense, it's like the flute player as a parable or an analogy?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be a sport, it can be a skill, it can be a handicraft. It can be an art, it can be performance or whatever. You know, I think it's the thing that you have as a touchstone. It can be your formulation of these ideas, but I think it can expand outward. I mean, I'd like to say, there's not much time left, but going back to this 64, I think it's very interesting that EJ, in this talk here that he elicited, when is it easiest to self-remember? And he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there were probably even more people that answered this question, but there are 6 different people who have 6 different answers, and I think that this is what it suggests here in this script here, is that there are these different typicalities. You know, these are the characters, the personalities, the essences, not the essences, because the essences are alike, but the typicalities are all different. And so, because what I noticed, picked up on this right away, is somebody says, you know, what's the easiest to self-remember? Doing big body movements. I mean, it reminded me, we just had a movements workshop. I mean, I have to say that when I was first exposed to the movements, you know, through the Institute here, like not the Gurdjieff movements, but EJ's movements, let's say, and I don't think that I have ever encountered anything else that was more conducive for me, anyway, for self-remembering. In other words, doing the movements, it's like, your body, you know, the moving centrum, the body becomes the feedback device. If I'm having to balance, if I'm doing these obligatories or this, you know, the first set, the second 4 sets and all these movements, it's like as soon as I'm not paying attention, if I'm not self-observing when I'm doing the movements, I actually will trip or stagger or jerk or something. I get, it's like the immediate feedback that I've lost my concentration and so on. And I have to say that then I look at some of these other things. Some people find it easy to self-remember when doing housework or somebody else when doing office work. That would be the furthest possible for me. Like, this would be a huge accomplishment for me to set an intention to self-remember and do something for 2 minutes during office work. Or when sitting and talking, that would also be challenging. Or someone else says, oh, I can self-remember when there's a quiet moment. I mean, there's obviously those are different. So I'm thinking, you know, the fact that I got this tremendous gift, I feel, from doing the movements, which is to say I actually know what it feels like to self-observe continuously for something like 10 minutes or 15 minutes, because you cannot do a movement series and not pay attention to your body. It's externalizing you. You know what I mean? You're getting out of the interior loop. Oh, I'm emotional about, I'm hungry, I'm this, I'm that, I'm sad, I'm this. It's like, it's just like, okay, am I balanced? Am I in balance? And is this flowing? Am I now flowing to the next posture? Have I hit the mark point? So on and so on. It demands your attention. And I think it was, for me, it was a tremendous gift to do enough movements to then realize the thing that what Harry's talking about, that, you know, when I'm sitting and talking with people, or when I'm eating lunch, or when I'm in the classroom, or when I'm walking down the street, I'm not having that concentration that I could have for 10 or 15 minutes solid doing the movements.
Right.
And so, I don't know, I think it would be this exercise, the exercise that EJ's proposing, like for me to say, oh, okay, I'm going to set an intention to self-remember while doing housework, doing chores in the morning or something like that. This would be a tremendous exercise for me. But what I would do is, one of the ways I would try to keep from forgetting that is to say, okay, I'm going to have this sweeping the floor or doing the dishes, I'm going to have this be like the first, second, third, and fourth movement series. I'm going to observe
Absolutely.
Myself and not... Not screw something up while I'm doing the dishes or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Be teaching in front of a class too.
Yeah, there would be things. If I can come up, identify the things that are most mechanical, let's say that are most habitual, and I do them as play scripts, you know, like a script that I've done for years. I should try to self-observe and have a little bit more of a breath in it. Let's say deep breath.
And it'd be poetry in motion. You know, it'd be something interesting. Anyway, so those are just some thoughts.
Well, what came to mind is Barbara wrote a book recently that's now been published, Every Day a Holy Day, which is all about keeping that awareness going through the daily activities. Every page is a different activity, and she shows how she does that.
Yes.
Yes.
Every day is a holy day when you stand on holy ground and you bring that to the space that you're in.
And I would like to support what Ivan was talking about there, yeah. Where you would take a daily activity. For me, I know that if it's scheduled that I'm meeting with any portion of our group or community, by definition, I bring something to that that I would not ordinarily carry with me into a, quote, regular interaction with outside people. So I try to make sure that I have some form of groupness. Oh, well, let me see. I live in a group house. You know what I'm saying? I built it in to my life to have the reminders as part of my backdrop, so I don't have any place that I can't remember. Every place that I'm in has the potential for me to remember.
Yeah.
That's how I build it.
There's another element of groupness. When we meet in group, as we are right now, or at dinner, or when I meet tomorrow with Denise, or whatever it is, or Nancy, or Robert, or I'm bringing a little extra something to that.
That's right.
By the nature of the relationship with those individuals.
Yeah.
So we can use that to further our work.
Yes.
Bernie LaPlante says, make fresh your repetition, or enliven a habit.
Sure.
Yeah. And Molly Midway says, thanks, great guides.
Thank you so much, Molly. And thank all of you for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday
night at 7 o'clock.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
You too.
Good night.
Thank you.